In Newtown, funerals continue. First graders Grace McDonald, Olivia Engel, and Dylan Hockley are being buried today. So are Rachel DeVino, a teacher's aide, and school psychologist Mary Sherlock. Meanwhile, a nonprofit group claims it's designed a semi-automatic rifle that can be built on a 3D printer. A YouTube video shows it being fired 6 times before falling apart. That development comes as a law that makes it illegal to build guns that can't be detected by an X-ray or a metallic scanner. Guns like that plastic rifle is set to expire next year. Given all that, how do we keep something like Newtown from happening again? Dr. Jerome Kassir believes the medical community has a role to play. He's on faculty at Tufts University School of Medicine. He's a former editor of the New England Journal of Medicine. And he has an online essay in the Archives of Internal Medicine today, arguing that doctors have a professional responsibility to try to help stop gun violence. We spoke with him this morning before the National Rifle Association press conference, where the NRA called for armed guards in all schools. I asked Dr. Kassir what steps the medical profession can take to better address gun violence.
The information about guns and violence is severely wanting. In the 90s, the CDC was collecting all kinds of information. The National Injury Center then was active in collecting data. And if you look at their website today, there's a lot of information about the deaths from cars and the deaths from bicycles and so forth. Nothing at all about the death from guns.
And what's changed that means
What changed is that Congress shut it down. And there was enormous pressure from the gun lobby to stop the National Injury Center from collecting the data. And what we need are better data on those relationships in order to really figure out what to do about it.
But if we come away from the data piece of this, what should a doctor do if the doctor has a patient that owns guns? The doctor knows that. What should the doctor do or say?
For a long time, pediatricians and other specialists have advised physicians to talk to their patients about what kind of guns they have in the home and what kind of protection there is for those guns. I mean, if there are guns sitting in the bedside table that are loaded, that's a real risk to someone, for example, who's just going to pick it up and start playing with it, or someone who's psychiatrically disturbed and is contemplating suicide. So the fact that a gun is available is a serious problem. So doctors have been talking to patients about that sort of thing, and they still do.
Because because a gun is a health issue and that
exactly.
It could injure you, and therefore you think it's a relevant conversation for a doctor to have with a patient.
Absolutely.
You mentioned a Florida law that restricts doctors from talking to their patients about the risks of guns or from asking whether they own firearms, and you say doctors should fight that kind of law. How prevalent is that kind of restriction?
The law was passed in Florida, but a federal judge declared it inappropriate. And however, the governor, Governor Scott, had decided to appeal the decision. It exists also in a couple of other states, but it's not widespread.
I want to read a portion of your essay. It says, "While troops were searching fruitlessly in the deserts of Iraq for weapons of mass destruction, our politicians have been ignoring major public threats from the increasing number of military-style weapons of mass destruction in the closets, bedside tables, and car trunks in our own cities and towns." Dr. Kassir, you seem to be describing weapons in homes as a public health threat that's more dangerous than the threat of war and terrorism.
What you didn't mention is the title of the piece is Weapons of Mass Destruction. So while we're worrying about the weapons getting into the hands of the wrong faction in Syria, we've got allowed weapons to get in the hands of the wrong people in our own country.
Your essay focuses largely on gun control, but where do you weigh in on how mental health treatment plays into this?
The real discussion should be around the risk of guns and the massive ammunition clips that people are using. Yes, we should treat psychiatric disorder, but to try to identify prospectively the people that are going to go out and shoot dozens of people is fruitless. If you screen people for, let's say, for lung cancer, most of the people that you find lesions are going to be false positives. If you screen the people who are heavy smokers, most of the lesions you find are going to be cancers. We have a large population of people who are described as loners or as socially inept or whatever. And if we start looking at those people as potential shooters, we're going to be doing a lot of screening for a very small benefit.
As more people get access to health care in coming years through health reform, how should we take all those individual doctor-patient interactions that will be happening in exam rooms and the conversations about gun safety that you want to be happening in those exam rooms and use them to make a difference on a national scale?
If this was a part of a regular examination, then I think we could try to make changes in the way people store their guns or even keep their guns and have a real impact on public health.
Dr. Jerome Kassir is a professor at the Tufts University School of Medicine, and he's written an opinion piece today for the Archives of Internal Medicine urging the medical community to play a larger role in fighting gun violence. Dr. Kassir, thanks for coming in.
Pleasure.
Across the country this morning, a moment of silence was observed for the Sandy Hook victims. Churches and other places of worship rang their bells 26 times in remembrance of the 20 children and 6 adults who died at the school. This is what it sounded like at Edmond Town Hall in Newtown, Connecticut.
Aviel Richmond, age 6. Benjamin Wheeler, age 6.
You're listening to Here and Now.